Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and then it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Good evening. It's Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time here in Missouri. You are listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I am Lisa Payne Nager. I'm thrilled to be here with you again tonight. We have a pretty good lineup for you for tonight. Cindy McGee is not going to be with us this evening, though, so if you read the show lineup tonight, she had some other more pressing issues that she had to address this evening, so she will be out this week. We hope to have her back next week. She gave us some great preparedness tips last week, and I hope to have her back to do that again very soon. And we're gearing up to have Cindy on Tuesday evenings with us right before Cynthia Davis. If you are a Missourian, you know full well that we have had the pleasure for many years of having Cynthia Davis spend 8 years in our Missouri legislature. She is a true constitutional conservative, and she is here on Missouri Grassroots Radio with us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 9 o'clock. And you can go to our webpage and pick up on her podcasts there. We're making a radio page for her. And get in touch with her. Cindy is now part of the Constitution Party. She was a Republican. Now she's a reformed Constitutional Party candidate. She ran for lieutenant governor in the last election, and in the Constitution Party, unfortunately, was not elected. But Cindy is just one of the most entertaining, most conservative, most straight shoot from the hip kind of people that I have ever met, and she's just a joy to listen to. So if you have the opportunity to tune in and hear Cynthia on Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. right here on Missouri Grassroots Radio, please do that, and we'll make sure that we get those podcasts up for you so that you can listen to her shows. She is always wonderful to hear. Been another busy week. I had a conversation. I was talking to Cynthia on the phone earlier today, and she made a comment today that she says every morning when she gets up, she's being machine gun, although those are illegal. So, but there's so much going on, and I feel like there's so much going on in Missouri when the session is going, and nationally, it's just absolutely out of control. It's so hard to keep up with everything. So, today we're gonna try to keep up with some of the events that have been going on over the last the last week or so. There's so many things, and I'm not going to be able to touch on many of the things that have been going on over the last week that are top news items. But we'll hit a few of them as much as we can tonight, anyway. Week on the blogs. I published a couple of really good blogs this week, blog posts on Politichicks TV. If you ever have the opportunity to go to Politichicks TV, that's a wonderful blog. We had a couple of great articles there this week. The first one that I published, the end of last week, right after last week's show, was a blog on a family from Germany and how their liberties that they came to Germany or came to the United States as political refugees, and they granted asylum in the court here because they were being oppressed. They're a homeschooling family. It's illegal to homeschool in Germany, and they came to the United States to homeschool their kids because of religious persecution and various other things. And they were granted asylum here by the courts in the United States. And lo and behold, our fearless leader, and his administration is contesting their court ruling and trying to have them deported and sent back to Germany. And there's a story up on Politics TV. Eric Holder in the Department of Homeland Security is contesting the ruling, trying to send them back on the grounds that they are not being persecuted. And what's unique about that story is the fact that if the government is successful in overturning that ruling, it could affect homeschooling families and families all across the country in their ability to choose their education for their kids. They're saying that, let's see if I pull up the article here real quick and remember what I wrote. This is a quote from Homeschool Legal Defense, I believe. When the United States government says that homeschooling is a mutable choice, saying that it is a characteristic that a government can legitimately coerce you to change. In other words, you have no protected right to choose the education for your children. Our nation would remove your ability to homeschool, and your choice would be mutable, since the government has the authority to force you to implement their wishes. So, I mean, that's basically the gist of the article. That's basically what's happening to this homeschool family. And that's basically what could happen to you as an American citizen if Eric Holder and the Department of Homeland Security are successful in overturning the case. It's a huge, huge, huge problem for Americans here and their ability to maintain their parental rights. So please go to Politics TV and read that if you have the opportunity. Also, published another article over the weekend. And it seems that I live in the St. Louis area. And not that this is unique to St. Louis, but because it's happening all over the country. But St. Louis, there's an article up at Politics TV as well. St. Louis, hub of Islamic social media dominance. And a little scary. The director of care here in St. Louis sent out a Twitter feed not too long ago saying that Muslims, according to the Quran, let's see if I can find the quote here, that Muslims, here we go, my computer's acting up just when I really don't want it to. Nobody ever wants their computer to act up. Asserts that Islam and the Muslim movement should take a page from the Pentagon playbook to use social media to drive their message. And the message should be, according to this, the director of care, to monitor the internet and use it to prosecute anyone who posts anti-Islamic or anti-Muslim content there. And he goes on further in his Twitter feed to talk about how the courts and how the government needs to persecute and prosecute anyone. This is just a huge free speech issue, and if you are watching this issue at all, you know that not only are there a lot of initiatives in the courts and in the legislature to try to get this widespread acceptance of the Muslim Sharia law and those kinds of things into our government. This is a huge freedom of speech attack. So let's see. I think one of the most important things that was written on this Twitter feed, he wanted to report, I'm reading this directly from his Twitter feed, report an anti-Islamic and anti-Muslim content on the internet to appropriate authorities to take action to remove it and go after all those who post online and prosecute and take actions according to the Sharia ruling. So they're trying to initiate Sharia law here and make it part of the American culture and, you know, into the American courts. Now, there's been legislation here in Missouri that has been introduced in the legislature, and it's always fallen short. I think they call it American Laws for American Courts. And, it's a very hot button issue. And I'm going to follow up to that on that article next week with another article. Some of the issues that people need to consider is writing more legislation to correct bad situations is not always the way to go. And in Missouri, we have in our Constitution. It's part of the legislature's job to monitor the judiciary. And since we have not impeached a judge here since the Civil War, I would venture to guess that it would be fair to say that maybe the legislature is not completing all of its duties. You know, writing legislation is maybe not necessarily the best way to make sure that our laws are followed. Maybe we need to be pull in a little tighter on the judiciary and make sure they're following the Constitution. There's no reason to expect that any judge in Missouri should use Sharia law or any form of foreign laws to uphold our Constitution here in Missouri or our federal Constitution. So go to Politichicks TV and read about that. Also, if you have an opportunity, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and sign up to get our alerts. I sent out an alert today on another homeschooling issue. HSLDA has been following, and if you heard the show last week, we had William Estrada on talking about there's a bill going through Missouri filed by Kurt Barr. And it's a parental rights bill, and it has received its hearings, and now it's sitting in committee, and we want the committee to vote that out onto the floor. So I issued an alert through Missouri Grassroots Coalition today, and I posted my blog link up there to Homeschooling United, and you can read all about that alert issued by parentalrights.org and HSLDA and find out how to contact your legislators so that you can get on board and encourage them to support this bill. This bill does everything to strengthen up parental rights here in Missouri, to keep courts from reaching too far into the family when they're before they have an opportunity to take children out of good homes, away from caring parents, and putting them into foster care. To solidify parental rights. So make sure that you go to go to homeschoolingunited.wordpress.com or go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and read about that alert there. Okay, like I said, we have a very good and full lineup for you tonight, folks. Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity is going to come back with us. We hope he's going to give us an update on Right to Work, because it is Right to Work Wednesday. And also, Americans for Prosperity has done a lot of research. Missouri is under a huge attack. It's just frustrating. Counties all over Missouri, I think there's maybe a handful of counties in Missouri that do not have ballot initiatives to go on the ballot in April to raise your taxes. And there's just a few, I mean, maybe a handful. And Patrick Warner and the good folks at Americans for Prosperity have been watchdogging that issue. And he's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about all of those, you know, tax and spend things that are on the ballot for April, and give us a heads up on that and give us some strategies on how to fight that. Ben Evans is going to be with us from Heritage Action, and he's also with the St. Louis Tea Party. There's been a little dust up within the Missouri GOP. It seems that there have been some people rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, and Ben's going to give us an update on what's going on with the candidates up for slated for the Rules Committee. It seems that Ed Martin was slated to be the next Rules Committee candidate there, and some folks have been playing politics and fast and loose with their commitments, and Ed Martin is no longer supported for the Rules Committee. So Ben's going to give us an update on that. Tom Martz with the Lock and Smith Foundation is going to come on later on in the program, and we're going to talk Yankee Doodle legislation. And speaking of taxes, Gary Wigert, also of the St. Louis Tea Party, is going to come on and explain to us what the St. Louis Arch Tax is and what it is not and how it's going to affect us maybe outside the city and county of St. Louis, and just exactly, you know, the fine points of where that money's coming from and where it's going to go. So, like I said, we have a full lineup tonight. Let's take a real quick break, and we'll come back with Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000.
That's right. We want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we are pleased to present to you once again here on Wednesday evening, Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity. He's here to give us an update on all of the hullabaloo going across the state. Patrick's the state director for Americans for Prosperity here in Missouri. Patrick, thanks for coming on tonight.
Hey, Lisa, thanks for having me.
So, where do we start? First of all, actually, I did a little research today. I kind of looked at some of those right-to-work bills, and everything's kind of just sitting still. That's a little not maybe the best news that I would like to hear. Have you got any right-to-work news for us tonight?
Yeah, maybe a couple of points. You know, from our perspective, right-to-work has been a key priority for us at Americans for Prosperity in Missouri, you know, ever since Michigan sort of did their thing at the end of last year. You know, we put up a petition online. We have almost 3,000 new signatures beyond our 50,000 members that have signed that right-to-work petition. We're excited about that. We're ready to engage those folks. But you're right. As it relates to the legislation, it sort of started to get a little hearings, you know, started to be some discussion about it. Paycheck protection issues sort of, you know, went front and center. I'm not worried yet. I understand that the House needs to do a head count. I understand that the Senate needs to go through and hear debates and really, you know, get into this issue before it really starts moving. So I'm not worried yet, but we are, as they say, stacking the deck chairs on the Titanic, and we're moving things around, and we're getting ready for if and when we can get this bill to start moving.
Well, that's good. I mean, I know of four bills. I think there's more than four bills, and that's not counting paycheck protection bills, but it's HB 77 is the one that's getting the most attention and that has had the most, you know, the most movement, and it's had its public hearing, and it's still kind of sitting there. Haven't heard anything about if they're going to take that bill language out that's going to put it on the ballot in November, or if they're going to just give it an up or down vote. Are there any rumors flying around the Capitol?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right. They originally filed that bill that would put it on the ballot. And then a number of us, our group and others, said, you know, look, if we have the opportunity that we would prefer that you all, the Missouri legislature, take this issue up, debate it, bring it to the floor, get it to a vote, and send it to the governor and take it from there without sending it to the ballot. And there has been discussions about that. They haven't done a Senate or House or Senate substitute that would sort of remove the ballot language piece of that. But it has been talked about. It is something that I think that they are looking into and want to do. It just hasn't happened yet. And I understand the value of time and doing this right and getting people ready and lining up speakers. So I'm not worried yet, but we do still need to keep the pressure on.
Well, okay, so absolutely. And I mean, and it's going to cost the taxpayers more than $7 million to put it on the ballot in November. So, I mean, we don't really want that. Is that an issue that Americans for Prosperity is willing to champion? I mean, I know you guys just really want right to work. I know you, if they did put it on the ballot, I know that you would be out there fighting for it, but really it would be a much better situation for everybody concerned if they would just vote on it.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that's partly what we send them there to do. You know, I've been doing, you know, the political scene for 14, 15 years. And in recent history, you know, the legislature is sort of, I don't mean this, you know, disrespectfully, but they sort of shucked their responsibilities, and we've noticed an increase of these sorts of bills that are being sent to the ballot versus really what we send them there to do and take these hard issues up. So we're hoping that they do that. We're hoping that they don't put this on the ballot. I think that, you know, this kind of issue, money would just come flying in from all over. We saw what happened in Michigan, and we saw what happened, you know, in Indiana. I mean, this is just something that we believe that they just need to, you know, bring up, offer as much debate time as they possibly can handle, and then at some point put this before their members and make a decision. That's what we're hoping for.
Yep, that's what leadership is all about, and sometimes it's not easy. So,
yep.
I would agree with you. Okay, so let's talk about. I mean, I got this email from you. Oh, I don't know, a few days ago, a week ago, and you guys have a squibbed thing on here, a scribbed thing on here of all of the counties, every single county,
yeah.
And how you guys, and what a boatload of research that must have.
Well, first of all, thank you for reading our emails. But yeah, you know, back in January, we got together as a staff here in Missouri, and we said, you know, look, what are some projects that we want to get into? And one of the ones we decided on, and I don't think anyone has ever done this before. If they have, I haven't seen it or I'm unaware of it, was to take a look at the April municipal ballots. And that we would say, how many different taxing proposals, whether it's a fee increase or whether it's a percentage increase on someone's property assessed value or a use tax or whatever it might be, we wanted to sort of take a look and see how many were out there. And I thought, well, let's see, there's 114 counties, maybe half the counties might have one. So I'm thinking there may be 50 of these, right?
Oh.
No. 230 different taxing proposals are being put on the April ballot across Missouri. And at least this is, you know, I used to work for Kit Bond, and I just happened to talk to Senator Bond last week, right when we issued this press release. And I said, Senator, you have a lot more history than me. Have you ever heard this project before? And would you be surprised if I told you there were 230? He was shocked. He said, that can't be right. I'm like, Senator, we called 114 different counties. It's 230, and I've got 9 counties that haven't even reported to us yet.
Right.
So it's ridiculous. And so what we wanted to do with that is, first of all, we wanted to put it out there. We wanted to let people know that this issue exists, that there's this many local and taxing entities out there, you know, putting something on the ballot. But we wanted to let the Missouri legislature know that they need to understand that this is in a context of everything else that's happening. Like, for example, we already know that on January 1st, the 2% payroll tax increase went into effect from the federal government. So every Missourian, every working Missourian, is earning less in 2013 than they were in 2012 because that 2% payroll tax was reinstated. And I hear that our supermajority Republican legislature is looking at a possible 1% sales tax increase to fix our roads. Now, I'm not, you know, debating whether we need to fix our roads or not, or I'm not really discussing the merits of 230 different tax increases. But when you add all that stuff up, mm-hmm. I mean, it has a negative impact on the fiscal climate of Missouri. And that's why we did this. We want them to understand that it is very possible, Lisa, like right here in St. Louis County, for example, it's very possible that Missourians, our neighbors, could get hit 4 different times in this year alone, in 2013, with different taxing proposals. It's ridiculous.
It's insane. I mean, when you think about it, you're absolutely right. You're dead on the mark. I mean, everybody's paycheck just got hit by 2%, and then and if you're looking down the road, Obamacare kicks in 2014, and our healthcare costs are going to double and triple. I mean, people have no idea what's about the train that's about to hit them with that, and
yep.
And all of these little. I mean, St. Charles County has 15 ballot proposals on the ballot.
St. Louis County. St. Louis County is 15. Yeah.
and Kansas City only has two. I mean, but this is insanity. This is insanity. I can't believe
it. It is.
People ask.
And you know what we did, Lisa? We after we were sort of, we had to take a step back. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That's a lot. I mean, what are we going to do about this? Like, we didn't really anticipate there being that many, you know? And we have a map up. We actually have a map, and I think it's nine counties where there's not a single tax proposal anywhere in the county, and they got this. They're coded yellow on our map. The rest are green. So there's nine little counties across the state with no where I would say Missourians are safe from local taxing entities on April 2nd. But what we did was is that we took a step back and said, well, what do we do now? I mean, we put this out there. What do we do? So we put together a little how to defeat a local tax increase plan. So we asked the folks, our members and others, that said, if you would like us to come out there, we'll make a presentation, we'll get people together, and we're actually filling up our calendar. We're going to be in Platte County next week. We're going to be in Springfield, St. Charles, Jefferson City. I mean, we're going all over with our little how to defeat a local tax increase presentation. So, you know, we thought it just wasn't good enough to put this issue out there. We thought we'd try to do something about it, and that's what we intend to do. And what we're affectionately referring to March is March Madness, hands off our money.
Excellent, excellent. So you're going to give folks strategies on how to fight this and how to get the word out, because part of the problem is, you know, you and I may be political wonks, but I know my next door neighbors on both sides have no idea. My neighbor across the street, you know, they think they're engaged, they want to be engaged, but they're busy. You know, they've got young families, or, you know, and they don't, they see school taxes and things on the ballots, and they think, oh, it's for the kids, or, oh, we need new roads, or, you know, we want our roads. I mean, I actually had my county executive stand up in front of us in a meeting last year, you know, and propose a tax that wasn't even due for a rollback for like a year and a half or a year. And, you know, just use that emotional, you know, you don't want your roads to crumble right out from underneath you. And everybody voted it through. And they do this at the last minute. Don't have any information. So tell me, Patrick, just give me some idea. How do you get this kind of information and cast that wider net to the folks?
Yeah, you know, it's not easy. And what we tried to do is take a look at, if I had 10 volunteers and $100, what could I do? I mean, that's where we just wanted to, if someone, a lot of these folks, they don't have money, they don't, you know, they can't write a big check. And so what we put together is it's a PowerPoint, and it goes through things that they can do, or maybe things that we can help with, like it doesn't cost you any money to write a letter to the editor. It doesn't cost you any money to go get your Christmas list or your wedding list. And put together a little mailer, you know, and get your emails together and create a little Facebook page, or, you know, call the newspaper and sit down with them and talk. I mean, there's just a bunch of maybe inexpensive ways that you can sort of start this process and engage. Now, if folks are out there and want to get more sophisticated, we can pull a data set. We can put phone numbers behind it. You know, we've got phone programs. People have their own cell phones and stuff. So, I mean, there's just various degrees at which people can attack these things at the local level. You know, the smaller your community, in other words, if it's a municipal tax increase, well, that's a lot easier than if it's a county tax increase or a state, you know, increase. So you don't necessarily need as many resources at the local level. And so we're trying to, you know, impress upon folks that, you know, you can do things maybe in an inexpensive way and still have an impact.
Excellent. Yeah, because people need to get involved and engaged, and that's a great first step. Okay, Patrick Warner, how do people get in touch with Americans for Prosperity if they want to find out more information?
Yeah, you know, the best thing that we set up this year is what we call our Missouri Action Center, and it's a website. It's called www.moafp.com. MoAFP.com, and there has our contact information, but it has all of the legislation and action alerts and all the things you need to sort of get involved, and also has our municipal tax project on there. So MoAFP.com, it's all there.
Okay, great. Patrick Warner, Americans for Prosperity, thank you for being with us. Come back again soon and give us some more updates on that right to work.
Will do, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Okay,
see ya.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with Ben Evans.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Lisa Payne Nager, and this is Culture Delaney on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thanks for being with us again tonight. And we have Ben Evans with us on the line.
How are you doing?
Hi. Thanks for being with us, Ben. So you're kind of here kind of on a dual role. You're going to talk about Heritage Action tonight and the funny business going on with the Missouri GOP as a St. Louis Party guy.
Sure, and just so everyone knows, when I talk about a lot of state issues, I'm not talking on behalf of Heritage Action. We deal with congressional issues, although sometimes with state issues such as Medicaid, we do put out research from Heritage and take a stance on that. So whatever you want to talk about first.
Well, let's talk about Heritage Action first, and maybe you can give us a really good back on.
Sorry, what was that?
Let's talk about your Heritage Action stuff and give us some Medicaid expansion information. So I think it'd be great.
Sure. I'm having a little trouble hearing you, but I'll just go ahead and start talking about it. Heritage Action, we're the political arm, the sort of sister organization to the Heritage Foundation, and I'm the St. Louis Regional Coordinator. I've got all the congressional districts in Missouri and Central and Southern Illinois. And there's two really important issues coming up. This Friday, March 1st, is the first date of sequester, which is these mandatory spending cuts that are supposed to take place. And it's generally our position that these should go ahead and go through. And they're not really when you look at the spending cuts, they're obviously not at the level that we think that we should address. And they're sort of done in an arbitrary manner. But it's important to tell our representatives and our senators that. They need to let this happen, and basically, if our Congress can't go through with these minuscule spending cuts that are in place, nothing like the austerity that's going on in Europe, then how can we expect them to do spending cuts at any other level?
And it's, I think it's pretty important for people to understand, if you're listening to talk radio.
Sorry, Lisa, I'm having trouble hearing your question.
Oh, okay. Any better? I don't know if you can hear me. I'm having a problem with the board tonight. I don't know if it's your phone or.
I'm having real trouble hearing you. You're cutting in and out on me.
Ben, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Look, kind of explain about these spending cuts. They're not really spending cuts, growth of spending.
Yeah, and I think I got part of your question there. They're not really massive across the board spending cuts. They're from some deals that were put in place last year, I believe, you know, one of the things that's going on with the Obama administration right now is they're sort of pulling a Chicken Little on us, and we wrote a post on Heritage Action, Heritage Action's blog, The Forge, about that, and it's you know, they're screaming that everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket if we let these cuts go through, but there's charts out there. Zero Hedge, I think, had one, and we've sort of looked at the spending cuts. They're really not much at all, and everybody's worried about the defense spending cuts, which we're concerned about as well. You know, it's problematic, but it just sort of exacerbates Obama's terrible policies. You know, but overturning the sequester isn't the answer here. We need to go through with a regular budget, which we haven't seen from the Senate in over 4 years, go through the regular appropriations process, and during that process, you know, Heritage Action and other groups that feel we do need a strong defense will fight for the for defense to get funded at the appropriate level. But to complain that the military is going to be vastly underfunded if the sequestration goes through, that's just Chicken Little.
Yeah. Is this Medicaid expansion?
Sure, Medicaid expansion. Well, we all know that Obamacare is no good. We need to go after the fine with that. And just so you know, March 27th, there's a continuing resolution which funds the government, and it's our position that the Congress should add a rider to defund Obamacare. It's a perfect opportunity to get in there and go after it. At the same time, you've got Medicaid expansion going on, which essentially is the Obama administration, the federal government, can't implement this on their own, and so they rely on the states. And they dangle out this supposed free money for states, but study after study has shown that this will end up costing states more money in the long run. We need to support the governors out there that are standing up to it. Your Walkers and Jindals, and I know that some governors have caved on it, but truthfully, it's the state legislatures that you really have to talk to, and we need to be vocal with our own state legislature about where we stand on Medicaid expansion to block that money, because ultimately any money coming from Washington has ties to it, and it's not free money.
And it's an unfunded mandate. It's going to cost, it's still picked up.
Yes.
The educational funding carrots that they dangle in front of us.
Sorry, I can't hear you again, Lisa.
Most of the budget in Missouri is funded by the federal government.
Yeah, you know, I saw that on an email thread the other day, which actually talking about the other topic that you wanted to get to. It's the same sort of thing. They just dangle money out there, claim it's free, and it's not.
All right. Okay. All right. So on your St. Louis Tea Party hat now. Let's talk a little bit about...
Sorry, what was going on with the Republican National Committee people?
First of all, why is it important to have some fresh blood on that committee?
Sure. You know, the rules process is important, and we all saw that at the last convention. You know, we've got a national committee man, a national committee woman, and then we have our state chair, which is Ed Martin, and one of those people is on the committee. And it's important to have that person on the committee to make sure that the party basically has a bottom up approach to politics. And too often, I think a lot of the reasons that there's been so much turmoil in conservative Republican politics. Is that the many different groups out there, the Liberty movement, the Tea Party movement, even the pro-life movement, feel like they're not getting a voice at the top, and so much of that is driven by top-down politics. So when we've done so much, people like Frieda Keough and others did so much to help get the right people in place for the state committee and elect somebody like Ed Martin, we'd like to know that we do have a seat at that table for putting the effort in to keep the Republican Party strong, and we'd like to know that the Rules Committee is working in our favor, not against us. And And while I'm not into the details so much of the Rules Committee, and I think others can speak to it much better than I could, the issue at hand is that many thought that Ed would be that Rules Committee person, and we thought that we would have a voice at the table there. Unfortunately, that's not what ended up happening. Many bloggers have reported that Bill Hennessy, 24 State, had an article up about it, that essentially Ed was the Rules Committee nominee, and then a couple days later, that was reversed.
Okay. And so the controversy is why?
Sure. I think Hennessy had a good response to that, and we're really not sure why. It's one of two things. Either Lance Beshear and Catherine Hanaway weren't sure what they were doing, which seems hard to believe with two people that have been involved in Republican politics for so long, when they told Ed that he could take that rule spot, or somebody else is telling him what to do. And somebody brought up the whole idea of conspiracy theories. This isn't promoting any theory or anything. It's Ed was told that he would be on the Rules Committee. He told other people that, and then Lance Beshear and Catherine Hanaway reversed their position. And what has a lot of people concerned is that Lance Beshear, the national committeeman from Missouri, is connected with the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and a hospital that are lobbying right now to expand Medicaid in the state. And I think a lot of grassroots people, they're very concerned about having somebody on a Rules Committee that's clearly working against what most grassroots people care about.
Absolutely. And isn't it a conflict of interest?
Arguably it could be. I don't know the facts exactly on what should be done with that. But even if it's not in fact a conflict of interest, there's still the sort of air of backroom dealing and working with groups like the St. Louis Tea Party that work so hard for open government and making sure people know where their money's spent and what kind of rules are in place, it's important to know what's going on there. And I just think many people think that Lance Beshear is not going to represent those interests.
I mean, there's got to be something to pick. We can call. To kind of make some noise about that.
Sorry, I didn't catch the end of your statement there.
Do you know if there's anybody or?
If there's anybody who what?
Don't support this action. We want to contact somebody and let them know we don't support this. Is there anybody to contact?
I think, probably the best person to contact in this is to invite. If Lance Beshear is the Rules Committee person and nothing can be done about it, I think it would be important for people to reach out to him and have them come out to their Liberty groups or their Tea Party groups or their Republican meetings and share those concerns with him that he does need to, just like I am tonight wearing my Heritage Action hat and then wearing a separate hat when I'm talking about state issues, Lance Beshear needs to be able to wear the party hat that elected Ed Martin and that put so many liberty-minded people in place in the state committee. They need to make that clear to him that when he is representing the state of the Republican Party of Missouri, that he's representing those interests that have put all these people in place to lead the party.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's go back to Heritage Action. How can folks...
Sorry, how can they get involved?
Yeah, how can they get involved and get those updates that...
Sure. You can always contact me, ben.evans at heritageforamerica.org. I usually send out a weekly update on what's going on in Congress on Mondays. Our whole thing is influencing Congress through the activists on the ground that are already doing the hard work. We don't want you to do anything other than what you're already doing. We just sort of provide the tools and the information for you to talk to your legislators. We want you to be as informed as the 33,000 lobbyists that are in D.C. So you could always contact me. I encourage everybody to go to heritageaction.com. Also, we've got a great scorecard And you can get to that from the website. And the scorecard grades legislators on key votes that come up. And we use the policies and principles that Heritage puts in place, and we just sort of use those to guide us in what we key vote. And obviously one of the key votes coming up is the sequester. And we key voted against Chuck Hagel last week. So getting people involved with that, I would encourage them to go to the website, contact me. I'd be happy to lead you in the right direction and work with you or your group to influence Congress in a positive way.
Okay, very good. Ben Evans, Heritage Action. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
All right. Bye-bye. And we'll be back with Tom Martz and with a Yankee Doodle legislation alert.
This is the Gun Owners Minute. Missouri House Democrats introduced Bill Number 545, an anti-gun bill, which would turn law-abiding firearm owners into criminals. They will have 90 days to turn in their guns if the legislation is passed. This is what's in the bill. Any person who, prior to the effective date of this law, was legally in possession of an assault weapon or large-capacity magazine shall have 90 days from such effective date to do any of the following without being subject to prosecution. 1. Remove the assault weapon or large-capacity magazine from the state of Missouri. 2. Render the assault weapon permanently inoperable. Or 3. Surrender the assault weapon or large-capacity magazine to the appropriate law enforcement agency for destruction, subject to specific agency regulations. It also states unlawful manufacture, import, possession, purchase, sale, or transfer of an assault weapon or a large-capacity magazine is a Class C felony. Thank God that Missouri has a pro-gun House and Senate with a veto-proof majority. This has been the Old Patriot.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and we are here with you every Wednesday evening here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. If you have an opportunity, hit the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Sign up for our grass fire alerts. I sent one out today earlier on a homeschooling-related issue. Actually, not a homeschooling-related issue, a parental rights-related issue. And whenever we send those out, those alerts go straight to your cell phone or your email, and you can go to a post and get information on the latest developments right away as they are developing. So make sure you also hit the join tab and give us your information there so that you can become part of Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We're trying to develop a coalition of folks across the state so that we can be a louder voice in Jefferson City. And speaking of Jefferson City, we have with us tonight Mr. Tom Martz of the Locke & Smith Foundation. Locke & Smith Foundation does great work in the state of Missouri. During the session, they go through all of the legislation and throw it up against the wall and see what sticks constitutionally and see who's following that legislation and supporting it throughout the legislative session, and report back to you, the folks of Missouri, on who your best constitutional legislators are. So, Tom, thanks for being with us. I know you kind of joined us on the fly here tonight a little bit. You had some other things going on, so we're going to kind of fly by the seat of our pants and talk about some things happening in the state of Missouri as far as Yankee Doodle legislation. How are you, Tom?
I am fine, and I apologize for being out of the loop. I had a piece of equipment breakdown. I'm 5 hours behind. I'm not even home yet, so to say I'm flying by the seat of my pants is pretty accurate.
Okay, we'll wing it. Actually, I have a whole stack of bills here that we can talk about. Some of them are good bills, and some of them. Let's start with that. Since I have paper in front of me.
Did I lose you?
Hello?
Lisa? Are you there?
Yeah, we're having some problems with our board here tonight. Are you there, Tom?
I am. I hear you now.
Okay. A friend of mine alerted me to a really great bill by Ed Emery, SB 239. And I know Missouri Education Watchdog has done extensive reporting on this issue in the past. And anyway, Ed has put a bill through, a Senate Bill 239. And this bill says, no school district shall require a student to use identification device that uses radio frequency identification technology or similar technology to identify the student, transmit information regarding the student, or monitor or track the location of the student. And for purposes of this section, radio frequency identification technology shall mean wireless identification. What they were doing, and they're doing it here in Missouri, they're doing it all across the country, is they're putting bracelets. Radio bracelets on these kids and sending them home and tracking their activity and their movements and, you know, how late they stay up at night and how much activity they get after school and all of that's being recorded data. So good for Ed Emery. I think it's a good liberty-minded bill here that he's got. Only received two readings and it's kind of getting ready to be assigned to committee. So if you support kind of freedom and want to thwart this invasion of your privacy and your kind of an invasion of your parental rights, call your legislators and call Ed and tell him you support him on this bill.
Where are the parents when stuff like this is done?
Well, no, that's a great question, and that's the $64,000 question that goes on all the time. It's just...
I would have, now granted, we homeschooled our kids, but I would have never tolerated my kids, if they were in government schools, coming home with a little bracelet or an anklet or a wristlet or whatever you want to call it, so the school can track them after they're out of the school. I would have went ballistic.
Oh, I know. I would agree. But you would be surprised, Tom. I sat on a school board for 3 years, and the numbers of people that just put their kids on that bus, anything after that, and the reasoning that's involved. I mean, they'll tell you, oh, this is a study that's being done. We want to help your kids be healthy. I mean, look at what we've got in the White House. You know, we've got people in the White House telling us what we can eat. You know, there are people, you know, in New York telling us we can't drink large sodas, and people are buying into that. They tolerate that stuff. People tolerate that stuff on a large, widespread basis. You know, I would have never tolerated it. It wouldn't have flown in my house either, but people have conditioned to give up so much of their liberty and their privacy. I'm glad to see a memory that has stepped up and said something about this.
Why don't we just drop them off at a government warehouse at 6 o'clock in the morning, let government have them until 6 o'clock in the evening, and then parents can go pick them up, they can feed them, put them to bed, get them up in the morning, and then go drop them off at the government warehouse at 6 a.m. the following morning.
Well, you know, and that's the push. I mean, there's if you bother to follow education reform legislation, I mean, the push is to start them at school earlier. And, I mean, you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago, kids got a better education in less time. They need more time in the government schools. They need more time under the government school supervision, you know, to round out that education. And
well, government needs more time to browbeat them into submission.
Yeah, they're institutions for indoctrination and trying to indoctrinate our kids. You know, I tried to indoctrinate my kids with my values. Everything is an indoctrination issue, but really, for sure.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, call Ed. Something like that, if that's what's occurring nationwide, then something like that does need to be get through the state Senate and into the state House and get passed.
Right, yeah. So that entry on HB, or SB 239, tell me you did a good job with that bill. House Bill 513, that's the criminal rights bill. That's the bill that I sent out the alert on today. It received its hearing on 219, and it's waiting for a vote. So if you get an opportunity while you're calling Ed Emery's office, and if either vigilante, wordpress.com, homeschoolingunited.wordpress.com, on sidebar, you will see a long list your email. You can do a mass email to the entire House of Representatives and Senate in Missouri, and you can tell them to vote for to support the speech. Let's see. A couple of podcasts. Senate Bill 16. Oh, I talked about this on a Yankee Doodle legislation alert. It's the child labor bill.
And what's it do? Since I don't have it in front of me.
Contrary, notwithstanding, a child is defined in a subdivision may perform agricultural work as defined in a subdivision. A child with the knowledge and the consent of the child's parent and family farm.
Oh, this is similar to the one that was introduced last year, and I do believe that the committee gave it the boot.
Well, it's not got the boot this time because it's passed through the Senate and it had two readings in the House.
Well, if it's worded the same way it was last year, it will be something that we adamantly are in agreement with, because in reality, you don't need government's permission to have your child work for you on a farm or in your place of business or anywhere else in the state of Missouri.
Yeah, we're adamantly in disagreement. Is that what you said?
Well, I don't understand why it is that government thinks I need their permission to allow my child to work for me in my business.
Right, or on my family farm or in my backyard.
Correct. I don't need government's permission to do that, nor does government have any right to grant me the permission to do that.
And maybe it would be interesting to ask somebody, because I haven't had the opportunity to do so, but maybe House Bill 513, the parental rights bill, would maybe nullify this SB 16.
Well, there again, it falls in line with that Senate bill that I was talking about to you off air, where it grants the people permission to leave their place of residence with a home-brewed beer.
Let's talk about that one.
It's on the Senate side, but it has to deal with the, there's a beer festival coming up in St. Louis, and these home-brewed beers are not allowed to be in this festival because you have to pay, I think you have to pay like $5 to come into the festival, and then you get free drinks. Well, because these home-brewed beers have not complied or met with any state certification, it has been illegal for these home-brewed beers to participate in this beer festival because they don't have government permission to do so.
Okay, so so also thinking a little bit wider, I mean, what if you're a small business guy? What if you want to sell? What if you live in a small town, a small community, and you want to sell what does that do for you?
Your beer would have to get state permission, and you would have to get state permission in order to sell your beer. Now, the funny thing about this bill is that it allows you to take your home-brewed beer out of your place of residence, and you can take it anywhere you want to take it as long as just you and friends of yours are participating in the drinking of such. Do I really need government permission to go over to my buddy's house and drink a home-brewed beer?
Yeah, I'm not understanding that one. For you know, if I want to make hair bobs, you know, at the reseller shop down the street, do I have to have government sanction to do that?
Well, the funny thing is with this Senate bill, right now it's illegal for you to take your homebrew beer outside of your house and drink it, even if you're on your own property.
Get on your patio.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is what this bill is rescinding. But the way they have written it is that they're granting me permission to do such, when in reality they need to go back to the original bill and just remove the sections that makes it illegal to begin with.
Yankee Doodle legislation. I don't understand it.
Government doesn't have that authority over you. Nobody in the state legislature has that authority over you. And it's time the people stand up and say, look, you don't have my permission to do this.
Well, have you been following the infiltration? I gave up. I don't know who filed the bill. Bill that makes it illegal to file legislation to illegal or something. When I heard about that, I totally threw up my hands and totally walked away from Second Amendment issues here in Missouri because there were so many bills being filed. It was like a bunch of children fighting in the sandbox. You know, one side would fight. Bill and the other side would file a bill to try to counteract it, and it was just one thing right after another. Are you following any of that legislation, Tom?
You know, the funniest one that I have seen introduced so far, and it's by Mark Parkinson, and the reason that I think it's so funny is that it allows a federally licensed firearm wholesaler, reseller, to accept the same types of ID to purchase a firearm as you are allowed to use in order to vote.
Okay.
Now, yeah, it might be Yankee Doodle legislation, but, you know, I think the concept is, it's pretty humorous. I mean, and he even explained to me that he actually went to his Democrat counterparts in the House and asked them to sponsor it. Because these are the same people in reality that don't want you to have to show an ID to vote, but yet they want it required that you have to show an ID to purchase a firearm. And I'm at the point that I think there are more people in the voting booth that are more dangerous than people who own firearms.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree. At least a basic civics test to be able to vote, I think.
So some of this stuff is absolutely funny, but, you know, some of this stuff is going nowhere, and some of this stuff, it is a tit for tat. We're going to tell you that If you write a piece of legislation that infringes upon the Second Amendment, you're going to be guilty of a Class D felony. And then you have another individual who wrote the same identical bill and said if you write a piece of legislation that infringes on the collective bargaining agreements of the employees in the state of Missouri, you'll be guilty of a Class D felony.
So you did.
You're right. It's sandbox politics.
Yeah, sandbox. Ago, Buck Smith is doing a little research on just how much it takes to file legislation in Missouri. You got those numbers yet? Are those coming up anytime soon?
As soon as we get them, you'll hear from us, because we're going to put a dollar figure on how much it costs to write or to introduce, write, and get a piece of legislation to the floor.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great. There's
we're still waiting on a couple figures from Jefferson City.
$1,000. How many pieces of legislation are $2,000? Outrageous how they spend the people's money. Okay, let's talk right to work. We've had this debate. We had Mark Mix on with us last week, gave a great explanation of why right to work needs to happen here in Missouri. You and I have talked about it, talked about what's in the Constitution and how it's worded and how we may have right to work already or may not.
Now, I had the opportunity to listen to his interview, and I will say this, what he says actually makes more sense, because he actually tied it back to the Wagner Act. Now, that is one thing in reality that needs to be repealed. How any Supreme Court could rule that the Wagner Act was constitutional beyond me, but they were stuck with it, the state complied with it, and if right to work is the only means by which we can get out from underneath that, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think we got to get behind it. There's some things that still make me scratch my head over it, but I think we got to get behind it. And then,
now, I will say there is one thing different with the right to work legislation this year versus last year.
Yeah.
This year, both Ed Emery's bill and Eric Burleson's bill specifically states that any collective bargaining agreement will still be in effect until it runs its term, at which point in time, then the employees can say that we no longer want to be part of this union.
So that they don't have a big mess of litigation for pre-existing contracts if this passes.
Correct. Last year, the way it was worded, as soon as it was passed, all of those contracts would be null and void.
Oh, interesting.
This year, they actually gave it some thought and said, wait a minute, we cannot. That is going to cause us an issue if we make these contracts null and void via government. So let's let the contracts run out, let them run their course. And as soon as they run their course, that's when right to work takes effect in those businesses.
Good. Very good. Okay. Tom Parks, Locke and Smith Foundation. More updates for at the moment? Anything we need to know coming from you guys in the near future?
I'll let you know when I start looking at bills during this week.
Okay, very good. We come back hopefully in a couple of weeks. Week after next, you'll be with us again with some more information.
You got it.
Okay. Thank you, Tom Martz. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Gary Wigert from the St. Louis Tea Party.
This is the Gun Owners Minute. Missouri House Democrats introduced Bill Number 545, an anti-gun bill, which would turn law-abiding firearm owners into criminals. They will have 90 days to turn in their guns if the legislation is passed. This is what's in the bill. Any person who, prior to the effective date of this law, was legally in possession of an assault weapon or large-capacity magazine shall have 90 days from such effective date to do any of the following without being subject to prosecution. 1. Remove the assault weapon or large capacity magazine from the state of Missouri. 2. Render the assault weapon permanently inoperable. Or 3. Surrender the assault weapon or large capacity magazine to the appropriate law enforcement agency for destruction, subject to specific agency regulations. It also states unlawful manufacture, import, possession, purchase, sale, or transfer of an assault weapon or a large capacity magazine is a Class C felony. Thank God that Missouri has a pro-gun House and Senate with a veto-proof majority. This has been the Old Patriot.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, Our wives and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
Having major technical difficulties tonight, folks, and I'm so sorry for that dead air there. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour, and we are here to talk tonight to Gary Wigert. Gary was with us not too long ago when he was helping us become informed and engaged on the issues of local control in St. Louis City. And now we are dealing with a tax in the St. Louis Arch Tax. And Gary is here with us tonight to give us all the latest updated information on that and how that affects you in Missouri. Thanks for being with us, Gary.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Lisa.
Okay, so can you hear me okay? Because we're having some problems tonight.
Yeah, you dropped there for a while, but we got back.
Okay, very good. So, Gary, you know, no more local control, not going very well.
I took a beating there, didn't I?
Took a beating there, yeah. Well, fighting that big money is always hard. But
Rex Singfield money is hard to take on.
Right, and very, very seldom does Rex lose when he goes after something. So is Rex involved in this thing with Arch Tax?
No, let me first give you a little background, if that's okay, what this tax is. This Prop P is a 3/16 of a cent sales tax, and St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and St. Charles were all in it together. And to do this, they needed enabling legislation, which they passed in Jefferson City. And so two of the three must pass for the tax to go into effect. And everyone knows it's going to pass in St. Louis City. But St. Louis County is where we're concentrating our efforts, and we're hoping to defeat it out there. And the goal is to raise $31 million a year, and $7.7 million will come from city residents, and about $24.3 million would come from county residents. And $9.3 million will be spent of taxpayer money on just underwriting and paying the yields on the bonds. So I think that's pretty tough for taxpayers. They have to, you know, $9.3 million, and that's just to put up the bonds for this work. Now, 40% of it will come from parks. 40% of this tax will go toward parks, your local parks. 30% will go to the Great Rivers Greenway, and 30% will go to a city arch river project. Would you like to hear who's against this and who's for this, Lisa?
What are all those things? I mean, some of it sounds a little Agenda 21 to me, but what is that stuff?
Well, the parks is your local parks. Great Rivers Greenway. Now, here's one of the big reasons we're against this. It's because you have these private-public partnerships. And there's really no accountability. Nobody knows who really runs this stuff. Nobody really knows where their taxpayer dollar is going. Yet these organizations control your money, and they decide where it goes. So Great Rivers Greenway is 30% of your money goes to them, and they're about bike paths, and I've read their website, and they're pretty much for making things ecologically fit, I guess is the right word. And that's Great Rivers Greenway. And you can tell by just hearing the name of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Agenda 21 all the way through. And how much of that
Greenway? I think this is all tied into Agenda 21. Now, I really don't. And I'll be honest with you. I'm not an expert on Agenda 21. I followed a little bit. I think I heard a little on your show. I think that was last week I listened to. And was that last week you had the Agenda 21 folks on?
I do, maybe week before last with Ray Cuneo.
Okay, okay.
Yep.
I think this is a part of it. It's and they want, here's the thing, they can't finance it themselves. So they need taxpayer money to finance this stuff.
that's how all of that works. They finally maybe the first year or whatever, and then it's an unfunded mandate because it's government federal funds initiate
the project. Now, also the City Arch River Project, I really don't know who runs that. I know they got desires on our tax money. Now, you know what? I follow a little bit of California politics.
Mm-hmm.
And when you pay into these, when they have a vote out there, this money goes right to these public-private partnerships, and they decide where the money goes and what it's spent on. The taxpayer has no real say in this. You just give them your money, and then they decide what they're going to do. And that's why California has such problems, because they could vote for something, and people vote for something that they like to hear it. Say the word Arch and everybody, loves it. Say the word Cardinals and everybody loves it, or the Rams or anything else. You're like, yeah, I like my tax money going to that stuff. So everybody loves that stuff, but there's no guarantee that that's what it's going to go to. It sounds great, but they can then divert this money to all types of different things. And this is what we have a problem, especially with these public-private partnerships. And so what we've done is the St. Louis Tea Party has come out against this, and we, in conjunction with a number of the county Republicans, have formed a committee. I don't know if you know Jonathan Taylor, but he's the treasurer, and I've been appointed the spokesman to come out against this. The people who are for Prop P are Civic Progress. Do you know who Civic Progress is, Elisa?
Yeah, but tell us.
Okay, they are basically the CEOs of all the major corporations in the St. Louis area. And so that's going to be Enterprise Leasing. I think that's Jack Taylor's on that. Gray Bar Electric. Basically the people who run the area. And they have raised $367,500 to pass this tax.
Wow.
So, I mean, that tells you pretty much what we're up against. I mean, we're a real grassroots organization. We really don't have any money. It's very hard to fund these things when you don't have anything personal to get out of it other than saving your taxes.
Right.
So this is basically the rich people of St. Louis telling the middle class how we ought to spend our money, especially our tax money. And, it's one thing if they want to spend their own money on this. Now, instead of spending money to pass this tax, I wish they would spend that money to refurbish the arch or whatever.
Yeah, or Ballpark Village.
And Ballpark Village is another example. And here's another thing, too. I've got some numbers here that I think are kind of interesting that basically say how much will be spent and where it goes. We have Great Rivers Greenway, for those people who don't know, especially those in like St. Louis County. You're already paying one-tenth of a 1% sales tax. Now, if you combine what you're already paying the Great Rivers Greenway and what you're going to additionally give them under Prop P and the rest of the folks under Prop P, you will basically be paying 16 cents on $50 worth of gas.
Wow.
I think that's a pretty stunning amount. And then you couple that with the fact that I don't know if you've been following in the legislature that they want to pay a 1 cent sales tax on the roads.
Right.
So you have this roads tax that I think is going to pass and probably going to go out to the voters. And then you also place that with what they want to spend on this new football stadium tax. I mean, this stadium is going to be built somewhere here. I don't think the Rams are going to leave, but they're probably going to go out to out to the county somewhere, maybe north of ballpark, maybe north of the current stadium, or maybe they're going to tear it down and redo it. But I guarantee you they are going to depend upon tax money to do that. So you start getting hit with all these taxes, and it gets pretty expensive.
Okay, so my head's spinning now. so there's a couple questions that I kind of had in my head floating around while you were speaking.
Sure.
Okay, so this is something that's going to be going on in St. Louis City and St. Louis County. This is a Prop P on the ballot. Now, the ballot language that you sent me had St. Charles County in it, but have we determined that St. Charles County is not involved in this?
Yes, my understanding. Now, here's what happened. They projected, I think it was $38 million if St. Charles was involved. But since St. Charles is not involved, it's going to be $31 million they expect to get every year. And I got to tell you, I've been reading this thing over and over, and unless it's something that I'm missing or don't quite understand, there is no sunset on this tax.
Uh-huh.
So, I've read this thing, unless it's one of those things where it says referred to previous state law or whatever, and it's involved in that. But my understanding, there is no sunset, and I sure couldn't find it. Now, I've heard other people talking about that, that it's a 20 years, and then the tax goes out, but I sure have not been able to find that.
So that little devil's in the details right there.
Right. Now, St. Charles is out, and you're lucky.
Yeah.
But, if you want, I'll give you – and you know what, St. Charles, if you look at what some of the people said, I think it could probably make you pretty happy that you have the right politicians out in St. Charles. Here's a quote from Joe Brazel. Did I say that name right? Out in St. Charles, Republican? Joe Brazel, or is it Brazil?
Brazel.
Brazel. He said, whenever they need money, this is a quote, and he's referring to the city and county of St. Louis, he says, they come running to us.
Yep.
If you want to be a metropolitan community, it should be across the board.
Yeah.
And then we had a statement from Ailman, Steve Ailman. And here's what Steve Ailman, now in Jefferson City, Steve Ailman testified when they passed this enabling legislation. He wasn't for it, he wasn't against it, but he testified for informational purposes only. But he basically, when he testified, it was pretty much against it. But here's what he stated, why St. Charles opted out, because he wants to bar cities from diverting taxpayer money to unrelated commercial projects. And that's basically any tax money from parks or the arts ground development shouldn't be receiving your tax money to pay for these TIFs. And I tell you what, TIFs are a pretty tough thing to understand. Have you discussed them on your show before, Lisa? Or
yeah, but you know, they can always use a refresher. I mean, basically, tax increment financing. It's, you know, it's a carrot dangled in front of companies that exempts them from paying taxes, so that they'll come set up shop in your area.
Right. And you're basically stealing the other people, your these companies from other folks, and you promise them a TIF, and you give them some money to do these TIFs, and then they set up their own TIF taxing district, and then that money's used for some type of further development. I tell you what, it's one of the reasons why St. Louis City is broke, is because they keep awarding all these TIFs, and then these corporations, these companies, do not pay any taxes.
Right.
And I tell you what, I think it's a bad precedent to set. And I from what I hear, is they want to encourage business to come and build along the archway to make it more attractive to people.
Right.
And I assume along these bike paths and whatnot that they will have, I guess they'll have restaurants or some type of businesses that will attract people to go there. And I believe that business should be attracted by market rates. The market should decide where people build and where they build at, not these TIF commissions.
Okay. So to kind of sum this all up, I mean, we have another question. Is East-West Gateway Council involved in this?
I would imagine they are. I really don't know much about them. I haven't researched them much, but I got to believe they're all part of this. I mean, if Civic Progress is behind this, then I got to believe they are too, don't you think?
Well, that's my initial thought on it. So and West Gateway is very heavily pushing the Agenda 21 issue. I mean, they're going out to all of the surrounding counties in the St. Louis region, trying to promote their agenda there and bring, you know, Agenda 21 items here. Things like these bike paths and, you know, with the Green Rivers thing. I mean, it's all Agenda 21. Basically, Gary, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, what we've got is we've got old money here in St. Louis directing tax money coming in to establish profitable building for them. I mean, it's kind of like a China Hope deal in a way.
My understanding is they want to bring development back to the city, and they want to bring people back to the city. So I guess if you tax something like gas, mm-hmm. or anything else you pay for, it becomes prohibitive to move out to Chesterfield or whatnot. So what they want is they want people to come back downtown. They want them to live downtown, and they want them to ride bicycles to work, and they want you to have, you know, your gardens in your yard and make you self-sustaining. And they want to they have a real environment angle on this where if you're riding bikes, you're not polluting the air. And so it's basically both sides. It's like, okay, we want you to ride the bikes to work, and if you can't ride the bikes, then we will tax you if you use your car. Well, and they tax you pretty heavily to finance it.
This entire arch tax is a sustainable development agenda 21 driven situation where they want to create high density living in the city, and they're going to tax you to do it.
Right. Now, you know what? The city is partially at fault, too. Number one is the crime around the arch. Look, in the last month, we've had three shootings. One was done by a police officer on a drug deal right down there below the arch. He shot and unfortunately had to kill someone down there. But they think if they spend all this money, this will attract people down there. But you have to be safe first before mm-hmm. people will come there. I mean, you have to address safety first. And until you do that, you can build all the bike paths you want and all the greens and shrubs and everything you want, but it still will not attract people until it's safe.
Is any of the law enforcement?
Now, I saw here's the thing, when I read the law, it said that this money will be used, and they listed a whole bunch of things that money was going to be spent on fixing it up. Different assorted areas that are all connected to the arch, and it said for public safety too. Now, can that be taken out and paid to police officers or whatnot to patrol the area or to pay for lighting or what? I don't know, but that is also included in there.
But public safety was a very it was vague. There's no actual direct.
No, and look. You know, when they use terms like public safety, that can be for anything. It's just like if you remember that certain amount of money from these casinos should go to public safety. So it doesn't necessarily go to the police, but what you could say is it goes to all this lighting so that it's safer. Or you put up a fence in a parking lot and you call that safety. So that way money is used on that. But no, I've never seen it go to the police officers. Now, maybe I guess it could in that, but I've never seen that where they've actually done that.
Okay, and there's no specific provisions in this Prop P to do that, for sure.
Yeah, and it says it goes to public safety, but no way it's going to go. I mean, I'm almost sure it's not going to go to the police. And you know what? I wanted to talk to you a little bit more, while I have you on here, about the these public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. And how bad they are for the taxpayer.
Okay.
You know, when you give your tax money, and you know it's really important to me, you know, being a Tea Party person, you know, we're taxed enough already. And so when you take our tax money and you give it to these public-private partnerships, there is no accountability. If I give my money to the mayor or wherever, whatever city I'm in, and I don't like the way they spend my money, I can voice that complaint to that mayor and let him know my dissatisfaction or vote him out. But when I give it to a public-private partnership, they can do with that money whatever they want. They can have whatever kind of boards they want, but these people are not politically accountable for that money. Now, have you – I don't know if you're aware of this because you're not in St. Louis County, but St. Louis County is already funding a lot of these public-private partnerships already.
Mm-hmm.
And their tax money is going to these places, and I don't think most people know it, but county taxpayers pay for the zoo, the art museum, the science center, the botanical garden, and the history museum. And $10 million a year of tax money, which is two-thirds of the budget of the history museum, comes from the taxpayers. Now, I don't know if you've been following the Post-Dispatch articles about what has happened at the history museum.
No.
The history museum – Robert Archibald was the head of the History Museum, and what they did was they used our taxpayer money, and he bought a one-acre parcel of land. He paid $875,000, and what did he buy with that? I mean, what is that acre of land? It was a acre of land with a barbecue shack on it, and that is now owned by the History Museum. but previously it was owned by the History Museum board member, Freeman Bosley Jr. Huh. That is where your taxpayer money just went to. Now, that land has now been determined to be contaminated from prior tenants. There was no appraisal done before the purchase, and the value now is at $225,000. So that's almost fraud when you think about it, the way our tax money was used. Now, if private business wants to make these kind of crazy purchases, that's fine. But when our tax money is used for these purchases, that's where the problem is. And then to compound the problem, they hired, from the History Museum, they hired the public relations firm of Fleischman Hilliard and are paying them $15,000 a month of our money. And then when Robert Archibald finally resigned because of all the bad publicity, they paid him a $270,000 consulting contract. And then they also paid him a $567,000 payment for his unused vacation days. So he walks away with $800,000+ by making poor decisions.
Wow.
And he receives $515,000 yearly pay package. And that's salary and benefits.
That's good.
What he was being paid. So let me tell you a little quote, and this will explain how people aren't accountable, and I'll tell you who made this quote. And this came from a politician who said, "I want to thank Robert Archibald for his years of service helping the History Museum become an important cultural institution that has enriched our community." And who's really been enriched by this was Robert Archibald. It's made him a millionaire. And that quote came from Charlie Dooley.
Oh, my gosh.
The county supervisor. And the reason he can make these kind of outlandish statements is because he's not held accountable. If the taxpayer from St. Louis County says, "Hey, Charlie, you know, we don't like the way our taxes were spent," he says, "Well, you know, he did great work, but that's that institution there spent that money." And now that's just one organization, the History Museum. We don't know how our money is being spent at the Botanical Garden. We don't know how it's spent at the Science Center, the Art Museum, the zoo. We don't know how that money is spent. Until a scandal like this happens, you really don't know this stuff. And this is what is wrong with these public-private partnerships.
Okay. Okay, so there's a bill in the House of Representatives right now, HB 42. We've been watching this bill, and I haven't looked it up to see where it's flying right at the moment. But on the 14th, it passed out of committee, so we're hoping that it gets to the floor and gets a vote if it hasn't already. Anyway, HB 42 is it's an Agenda 21 bill, and it was filed mm-hmm. by Lyle Rowland, and it says, "Used in this section, political subdivision means all state, county, incorporated, city, unincorporated city, public, local entity, public, private partnership, any other public entity of the state, a county or city of the state of Missouri, and all political subdivisions shall not adopt or implement policy recommendations that deliberately or inadvertently infringe or restrict private property rights without due process, as may be required by policy recommendations originating in or traceable to Agenda 21, adopted by the United Nations in 92, and the Conference on Environmental and Environment and Development, or any other international law." Okay, so
is he invalidating these public-private partnerships? Is that what he's trying to do here?
That's what he's trying to do with all of these Agenda 21 issues. So mm-hmm. since I wonder if we get some action, if that will help this situation. Prop P is on the ballot in April.
Yeah, what they did was they also want to put – I mean, let's face it, these primaries are these elections are supported – I mean, they're voted on in the primaries, not the general elections. So they chose not to put it on the primary ballot. They put it on the general election. And let's face it, in the city of St. Louis, nobody votes in the general election because it's going to be a Democrat and no one else. And I assume the county is pretty much the same way now. And what's really disappointing was the county council, which has Republicans on that council, voted 7-0 to put this out to the voter. So I think a lot of these councilmen were pretty much intimidated by Civic Progress, because let's face it, they're the ones who donate all the big monies to everyone's campaign. So shame on them for doing that, but they did put that out there to a public vote. So I think you're fortunate, Lisa, that St. Charles at least stepped up, and they refused to even let their voters possibly vote this and be part of it. And how do you compete if you're selling gas and you're on the St. Charles side and you're on the St. Louis County side if they pass this? How do you compete when the fill up your tank is going to cost you 16 cents more in the people who vote for this?
Yeah.
I mean, there is no. I mean, people will drive that little extra distance to get the cheaper gas because of this tax.
Yeah.
And let's face it, these businesses are in competition. When people buy their gas and they drive across the state, they're looking at gas signs to see what they cost. People try to save their pennies. And then you cross into St. Louis County, then if this passes, and you're going to be paying considerably more for your gasoline.
Yeah, it's already cheaper in St. Louis County, or cheaper in St. Charles County than it is in St. Louis County. So you're already paying more for gas in St. Louis County. And it'll be a lot more if this passes, for sure. And,
right.
What are they thinking? I mean, putting another tax on gasoline when it's $4 a gallon? Are they kidding?
Well, that's how you force people to use bicycles, and that's how you force people to move in closer. Let's face it, development isn't happening in St. Louis, and actually St. Louis County is losing too. Let's face it, it's going out to Jefferson County, and it's going out to St. Charles out there, and that's where people are moving to. And it's made some of these other places kind of insignificant. So I think this is a way to force them back into it. But I think this is the wrong approach by taxing your own people. And, you know, in the city, we really don't even have much of a chance because the city looks at it as like, hey, look, we're going to get the arch ground financed and all this money redone around the surrounding area. And 3/4 of it is going to be coming from the St. Louis County voter. So why wouldn't they vote a tax where they're going to be the recipients of the tax? This makes absolutely no sense.
Oh, my gosh. My head's just swimming. Okay. Gary Wiggert, great information. Thank you so much. How can people get in touch with you if they want to become involved and help fight this fight?
Well, we've got the website. It should be up and running this week. It's going to be Vote No on Prop T.
Okay.
We'll have this website there. I think you've probably seen some of my articles I've written for 24 State, and we're going to run those onto the website. And we can put the trouble is here is we have to get the information out to people so they know exactly what this is. And all they hear is, hey, it's an arch tax, and everybody loves the arch, and a lot of people will vote for it. But we're trying to inform the voters out there so they can make a good decision on this. And We really want to let these county folks know that, hey, you've been financing a lot of things going on in St. Louis, yet the way people have been spending your money is not proper, especially things like the History Museum. So this will just be two more public-private partnerships. We'll be receiving county taxpayers' money, and it'll be funded by them. And I think at some point the county's going to have to stand up and say, hey, look, we're tired of financing this stuff. Now, also one last thing is, you know, Dooley and Slay both support a city-county merger, and I don't support that. I think that would be the worst thing that happened. That would really be the death knell of the the Republican Party and conservatives in St. Louis County, as they will be diluted now amongst the city Democrats. You know, when we have a vote here, people vote 90% for the Democrats and 10% for the Republicans. And what they'll do is they'll just gerrymander these areas, and the Republican Party will pretty much be finished in St. Louis County.
Driving catalyst for local control anyway was a city-county merger, really?
Yes. I mean, that's what it was about. And I tell you what, Rex Sinkfeld has come out, and he supports a city-county merger.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means he's going to be throwing big money behind it. I look for that to really be on the agenda in about 3 years. Now, Mayor Slay believes he's going to win his election. Charles Dooley's already come out and said he's for the city-county merger. And so let's face it, Dooley and Slay are both financed by Rex Sinkfeld. And so if he deems that this is his high priority, which he has, it's got a good chance of happening. And the voters really won't have much say in the matter, as money will buy publicity.
Yep, and this is Agenda 21, so
Oh, this is exactly it.
Yep. Oh, Gary, thank you so much for coming on. You can come back anytime and give us updates on this. I'll give you as much airtime as you want. People really need to know about this kind of thing going on on the eastern part of the state.
Thank you very much, and I'll be happy to fill you in how our progress is going. And you know, we're up against well-funded groups, so once again, we're kind of behind the eight ball here.
So, and one more time, what's the URL for that website that's going up next week?
It's going to be vote no on Prop P.
Okay, and we'll be able to get a hold of you through that website if people want you to come speak to the groups.
Yes, I've got a number. I'm going to be speaking in front of the St. Louis County Central Republican Committee, and I'm going to have to go speak to Democratic groups too. I noticed. I don't know if you know who Steve Sanger is. He's a Democrat in South County. And he came out and he said that this tax was unnecessary.
Oh.
So that's a good thing we can have if he comes out against this. Now, he voted for it to go to a vote to put out to the people. He realized he was it was tough for him. But when you have a Democrat who comes out and says this is unnecessary, that's huge. If we can get a number of his Democrats to be against this, I mean, we do have a possibility to win.
Okay, very good. All right, we got to get the information to the people. They need to know what's going on. And Americans for Prosperity was on earlier in the show. They have a huge list of all of the taxes of all the taxes going on all the counties all across the state. And maybe we can also partner with them and have them help raise awareness on this crazy art tax.
Right. Yeah, now AFP's already come out against this, so we've got them. They're going to be listed on as supporters of ours.
Okay, very good. All right, Gary Wiggert, St. Louis Tea Party. Thank you so much. We'll have you back and keep us posted on any of the developments. And if you want to get a hold of Gary, the Vote No Prop P webpage will have that information there.
And now I'm going to be writing about this on 24th State too. I've written a series of articles. And probably about three different articles on why we should be against Prop P.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you, Lisa, for having me on.
I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.
All right.
Okay, that's going to about wrap it up for us here tonight, folks, on Culture Vigilante. We're here every Wednesday evening. We'll be back next Wednesday evening as well. And don't forget to tune in on Tuesday evenings for Cynthia Davis at 8 p.m. With Homefront, and we will keep you updated. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and sign up for GrassFire Alerts and give us your general information so that you can become a member of MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And until next time, we will see you here again Wednesday evening on Culture Vigilante.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.